War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy. Part 1. Well, Prince, Genoa and Lucca are now no more than private estates of the Bonaparte family. Now I warn you that if you do not tell me we're at war, if you again allow yourself to palliate all the infamies and atrocities of this Antichrist, upon my word I believe he is, I don't know you in future. You're no longer my friend. There. How do you do? How do you do? I see I'm scaring you. Sit down and talk to me. These words were uttered in July 1805 by Anna Pavlovna Shearer, a distinguished lady of the court and confidential maid of honour to the Empress Maria Fyodorovna. It was her greeting to the old Prince Vasily Kuragin, a man high in rank and office who was the first to arrive at her soiree. "Heavens, what a violent outburst," the prince responded, going up to Anna Pavlovna, kissing her hand and presenting her with the view of his perfumed, shining bald head, and complacently settled himself on the sofa. "First of all, tell me how you are, dear friend. Relieve a friend's anxiety," he asked. "How can one be well when one is in moral suffering? How can one help being worried in these times, if one has any feeling?" said Anna Pavlovna. "Now don't tease me. What has been decided in regard to the Novosiltsov dispatch? You know everything."
"What is there to tell?" said the prince in a tired, listless tone. "What has been decided? It has been decided that Bonaparte has burnt his ships, and I think that we are about to burn ours."
Prince Vasily always spoke languidly, like an actor repeating his part in an old play. Anna Pavlovna Shearer, in spite of her 40 years, was on the contrary brimming over with excitement and impulsiveness. "Tell me," the prince asked, as though he had just recollected something, speaking with special nonchalance, though the question was the chief motive of his visit. "Is it true that the Dowager Empress desires the appointment of Baron Funk as first secretary to the Vienna legation?"
"He is a poor creature, it appears, that Baron."
Prince Vasily would have liked to see his elder son, Hippolyte, appointed to the post, which people were trying, through the Empress Maria Fyodorovna, to obtain for the Baron. Anna Pavlovna almost closed her eyes to signify that neither she nor anyone else could pass judgment on what the Empress might be pleased to see fit to do. "Baron Funk has been recommended to the Empress Mother by her sister," was all she said in a dry, mournful tone. "But about your own family," she said, "do you know that your daughter, Princess Ellen, since she has come out, charms everybody? People say she is as beautiful as the day." The prince bowed in token of respect and acknowledgement. "But I'm not pleased with your youngest son, Anatole. Between ourselves, people have been talking about him to Her Majesty and commiserating you." Prince Vasily frowned.
"What would you have me do?" he said at last.
"You know I have done everything a father could do, and they have both turned out des imbéciles. Hippolyte is at least a quiet fool, while Anatole is a fool that won't keep quiet. That's the only difference."
Anna Pavlovna pondered a moment.
"Have you ever thought of marrying your prodigal son, Anatole? People say," she said, "that old maids have a mania for matchmaking. I have never been conscious of this failing before, but I have a little person in my mind who is very unhappy with her father, a relation of ours, the young Princess Bolkonsky."
Prince Vasily only added,
"Is she rich, your young princess?"
"Her father is very rich and miserly. He lives in the country. You know, the notorious Prince Bolkonsky, retired under the late emperor and nicknamed the Prussian King. He's a very clever man, but eccentric and tedious. The poor little thing is as unhappy as possible. Her brother, it is, who has lately been married to Lisa Meinen, an adjutant of Kutuzov's. He'll be here this evening."
"Listen, Anna," said the prince, suddenly taking his companion's hand. "Arrange this matter for me, and I am your faithful servant for ever and ever. She is a good family and well off. That's all I want." And with the freedom, familiarity, and grace that distinguished him, he took the maid of honour's hand and kissed it.
"Well," said Anna Pavlovna, considering, "I'll talk to Lisa, the wife of young Bolkonsky, this very evening, and perhaps it can be arranged. I'll try my prentice hand as an old maid in your family."
Anna Pavlovna's drawing room gradually began to fill. The people of the highest distinction in Petersburg were there, people very different in ages and characters, but alike in the set in which they moved. The daughter of Prince Vasily, the beauty, Ellen, the young Princess Bolkonsky, who was there, celebrated as the most seductive woman in Petersburg. She had been married the previous winter, and was not now going out into the great world on account of her interesting condition, but was still to be seen at small parties. Prince Ippolit, the son of Prince Vasily, came too. Soon after the little princess, there walked in a massively built, stout young man in spectacles, with a cropped head, light breeches in the mode of the day, with a high lace ruffle and a ginger-coloured coat. This stout young man was the illegitimate son of a celebrated dandy of the days of Catherine, Count Bezukhov, who was now dying at Moscow. He had not yet entered any branch of the service. He had only just returned from abroad, where he had been educated, and this was his first appearance in society. Anna Pavlovna greeted him with a nod reserved for persons of the very lowest hierarchy in her drawing room. But in spite of this greeting, Anna Pavlovna's countenance showed signs on seeing Pierre of uneasiness and alarm, such as is shown at the sight of something too big and out of place. Though Pierre certainly was somewhat bigger than any of the other men in the room, this expression could only have reference to the clever, though shy, observant and natural look that distinguished him from everyone else in the drawing room. "It is very kind of you, Monsieur Pierre, to have come tonight." In reply to her, Pierre murmured something unintelligible. Getting rid of this unmannerly young man by introducing him to another of her guests, she returned to her duties, keeping her eyes and ears open, ready to fly to the assistance at any point where the conversation was flagging, just as the foreman of a spinning mill settles the workpeople in their places, walks up and down the works, and noting any stoppages or unusual creaking or too loud a whir in the spindles, goes up hurriedly, slackens the machinery, and sets it going properly. So Anna Pavlovna, walking about her drawing room, went up to any circle that was pausing or too loud in conversation, and by a single word or change of position, set the conversation or machine going again in its regular, decorous way. But in the midst of these cares, a special anxiety on Pierre's account could still be discerned in her. Pierre had been educated abroad, and this party at Anna Pavlovna's was the first at which he had been present in Russia. He knew all the intellectual lights of Petersburg gathered together here, and his eyes strayed about like a child's in a toy shop. Anna Pavlovna's soiree was in full swing when another guest walked into the drawing room. This was the young prince Andrei Bolkonsky, the husband of the little princess. Prince Bolkonsky was a very handsome young man, of medium height, with clear, clean-cut features. Everything in his appearance, from his weary, bored expression to his slow, measured step, formed the most striking contrast to his lively little wife. Obviously, all the people in the drawing room were familiar figures to him, and more than that, he was unmistakably so sick of them that even to look at them and to listen to them was a weariness to him. Of all the wearisome faces, the face of his pretty wife seemed to bore him most. With a grimace that distorted his handsome face, he turned away from her. He kissed Anna Pavlovna's hand, and with half-closed eyelids, scanned the whole company. "You are enlisting for the war, Prince?" said Anna Pavlovna. "General Kutuzov has been kind enough to have me as an aide-de-camp," said Bolkonsky. "And Lisa, your wife?" "She is going into the country for her confinement." Pierre, who had kept his eyes joyfully and affectionately fixed on him ever since he came in, went up to him and took hold of his arm. Prince Andrei, without looking round, twisted his face into a grimace of annoyance at anyone's touching him. But seeing Pierre's smiling face, he gave him a smile that was unexpectedly sweet and pleasant. "Why, you? And in such society, too," he said to Pierre. "I knew you would be here," answered Pierre. "I'm coming to supper with you," he added in an undertone. "Can I?"
"Oh, no, impossible," said Prince Andrei, laughing, with the squeeze of his hand giving Pierre to understand that there was no need to ask.
He would have said something more, but at that instant Prince Vasily and his daughter got up, and the two young men rose to make way for them. Princess Ellen, lightly holding the folds of her gown, passed between the chairs, and the smile glowed more brightly than ever on her handsome face. Pierre looked with rapturous, almost frightened eyes at this beautiful creature as she passed them. "Very lovely," said Prince André.
"Very," said Pierre.
As he came up to them, Prince Vasily took Pierre by the arm, and addressing Anna Pavlovna,
"Get this bear into shape for me," he said. "He has been staying with me for a month, and this is the first time I have seen him in society. Nothing so necessary for a young man as the society of clever women."
Anna Pavlovna smiled and promised to look after Pierre, who was, she knew, related to Prince Vasily, on his father's side. Conversation in the room unavoidably turned to the situation with France.
"If Bonaparte remains another year on the throne of France," said one guest, "things will have gone too far. By intrigue and violence, by exiles and executions, French society, I mean good society, will have been destroyed forever. And then,"
Pierre interposed,
"as far as I could hear, almost all the nobility have gone over to Bonaparte."
"That's what the Bonapartists assert," said the other man, without looking at Pierre. "It's a difficult matter now to find out what public opinion is in France."
"Bonaparte said so," observed Prince André, with a sarcastic smile. Quoting Napoleon's words, he said after a brief pause,
"I showed them the path of glory, they would not take it. I opened my anterooms to them, they crowded in."
I do not know in what degree he had a right to say so.
"None," retorted the other. "Since the Duc d'Enghien's murder, even his warmest partisans have ceased to regard him as a hero."
"The execution of the Duc d'Enghien," said Monsieur Pierre, "was a political necessity, and I consider it a proof of greatness of soul that Napoleon did not hesitate to take the whole responsibility of it upon himself."
"Dear, mon dieu," moaned Anna Pavlovna in a terrified whisper.
"What, Monsieur Pierre? You think assassination is greatness of soul?" said the little princess.
"Ah, no," cried different voices.
"Capital,"
Prince Hippolyte said in English, and he began slapping his knee. Pierre looked solemnly over his spectacles at his audience.
"I say so," he pursued desperately, "because the Bourbons ran away from the revolution, leaving the people to anarchy, and Napoleon alone was capable of understanding the revolution, of overcoming it, and so for the public good, he could not stop short at the life of one man."
"Won't you come over to this table?"
said Anna Pavlovna, but Pierre went on without answering her.
"Yes," he said, getting more and more eager. "Napoleon is great because he has towered over the revolution and subdued its evil tendencies, preserving all that was good, the equality of all citizens and freedom of speech and of the press, and only to that end has he possessed himself of supreme power."
"But won't you come over to this table?" repeated Anna Pavlovna.
Prince Andrei looked with a smile at Pierre, then at their hostess. For the first minute, Anna Pavlovna had, in spite of her social adroitness, been dismayed by Pierre's outbreak. But when she saw that the other guests were not greatly discomposed by Pierre's sacrilegious utterances, she rallied.
"Mais, mon cher Monsieur Pierre,"
said Anna Pavlovna, "what have you to say for a great man who is capable of executing the Duke, or simply any human being, guiltless and untried?"
"And the wounded he killed in Africa," said the little princess. "That was awful."
"He's a plebeian, whatever you may say," said Prince Hippolyte.
Monsieur Pierre did not know which to answer. He looked at them all and smiled. His smile was utterly unlike the half-smile of all the others. When he smiled, suddenly, instantaneously, his serious, even rather sullen, face vanished completely, and a quite different face appeared. Childish, good-humoured, even rather stupid, that seemed to beg indulgence. Everyone was silent.